Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of The Daily Churn. This is a series of little webisodes that I've been doing that are completely unedited and a little bit train of thought. I mean, I do a little bit of planning for these, like I have a little notepad with some stuff. And if today feels extra unpolished, I'm recording this on an iPhone at my parents' place. I'm visiting them for the week. And I was like, maybe I'll just skip the episode this week. But I was like, well, you know, like, let's just kind of go with the whole thing of just like keeping these really, really chill. And it doesn't really get more chill than me just recording these on an iPhone. And the iPhone is supposed to have a pretty good microphone. So let me know if you even like can tell a difference. But I don't even think I'm going to do show notes today. I've been just hanging with my parents and we're going to just get this done real quick, real easy, and just do a recap. And it's kind of crazy because it's like I was like, what am I even going to talk about this week? I'm just hanging with my parents, right? But man, it has been like, every week, I feel like I say this every week, but it's been hectic. There's some churning, so we'll definitely talk about some churning because this is supposed to be a churning podcast. But the secondary piece and part of why I'm here is that my parents are getting older. You know, I'm in my 30s, they're in their 60s. And it's finally getting to a point with, you know, health issues and stuff that we're like, we kind of need to figure out. Like, we need to get all your ducks in a row, like estate planning, you know, trusts, POAs, advanced directives, stuff that you probably have heard of if you're a bit older. And if you're younger, it's like, it's coming. These are all things that are going to come. And I've been kind of like, I've had my head in the sand about this for a while, but it's finally hit that we need to get this figured out. And we've been trying to figure it out kind of like weekly over Zoom for like an hour. And the progress has been so slow that I'm like, I'm just going to fly out here and we're just going to spend a few days and just hammer it out. And getting their finances consolidated. I mean, like, it's such an interesting thing because it's like I am feeling like I'm putting all of my skills to use towards this. Like, I was meant for this. If there's anyone that is going to be good at doing this stuff, it is a churner because it requires a level of like tracking and diligence and lists and, you know, trying to merge their accounts. So I'm going to get into some of that later on in this episode because I think it is generally useful if, excuse me, we just had dinner, generally useful if you have parents, which I think is probably the most of us. So, but first I figured let's like start with some actual churns. let's start with some things that are broadly relevant. So last week I talked about the in-kind offer. Obviously, quick shout out to everyone who used my in-kind referral. I've got a few hundred dollars in in-kind referral cash now that I can use up, but the promo itself, that expired on July 31st, and P1 and P2, myself and my wife, we went to our first in-kind restaurant to make sure we used that free $25 off. And there's a couple interesting insights here with in-kind that I didn't know before because I'd never used it myself until they came around with that free $25 promo. And the big thing is if you have a P2, and even if you don't have a P2, you can split the bills so that you can use multiple in-kind credits. So we made sure that our sushi that we went to was just over $50. And so that way we could split it down the middle and 25, I used my free 25 and then P2 on the same check, but just split, used her 25. And I've seen reports of like, you can just sort of keep splitting it and doing it to use up more of your promos if you have other promos to use up. That's sort of the workaround for it. And yeah, it was a pretty easy use for it. And what's funny with in-kind is that like, they must be doing something right with their marketing because I feel like everyone I've run into who isn't like a churner, like knows what in-kind is. Like this is not a, you know, each time when I went to told the server I was going to use it, I was like, hey, do you like any chance I could use my in-kind thing? He's like, oh yeah, in-kind, of course. She's like, oh yeah, yeah, I recently signed up and I have some credits I need to use too. So she was familiar. And the first time I really heard of in-kind out in the world, you know, outside of our like Discord and the podcast, was a friend of mine went to dinner with me. And at the end of it, we were all just going to, you know, give 3 credit cards and pay for the bill. But he was like, do you guys mind if I use in-kind? I'm like, sure. And then he asked the server, do you guys take in-kind? They're like, yeah. And he ended up paying the whole bill. And we ended up just Venmoing him money. And so I was like, oh, this is like a thing. This is like people, I guess they sell it in-kind gift cards at Costco. I don't know if he was churning referral credits, which is, I know, how a lot of people are getting a lot of in-kind money. So that's another option. You know, you don't need a podcast to churn those referral credits if you're a little bit creative. So that was my update there, was that I used it. And now I'm going to try and find other restaurants. There's only like 3 restaurants in my town that are in-kind, but out in Denver, there's like 100. So next time we're out there, we'll probably use that. The other churn that I was working on this week, at my parents' place, like from my bedroom, which is where I'm sitting in, the same bedroom that, I mean, I was like 14 years old in this very bedroom. So it is kind of a nostalgic, I don't want to use the word traumatic. Is it traumatic? No, it's more just like, you know, it depends what kind of childhood you had. I think, mine was not the, not the best, I would say. So there's nostalgia being here and also just being like, you know, man, I was here like 20 years ago. I had no idea what was going on, what I was doing. At 14 was when I first moved from England here. And like, despite having like a very cool British accent, I was just like, it felt like being a fish out of water. And that was a really hard time for me in this very bedroom. And it's like so trippy to be back here. And now I'm like sitting on my phone recording a podcast about churning. Like how 14-year-old me would not have, you know, it's like kind of out of a sci-fi. Like how there's no way I would have been able to predict this is where my life would have went. And it makes me wonder what, that was like 20 years ago. So what does 20 years from now look like, right? And so anyways, I'm sitting in my bed and I was like churning the Citi Strada Premier card. It's that newish one from Citi. I think came out a week or two ago. It's a 80,000 points for $4,000 of spend, or 100,000 points if you go in branch. And there's also a link that's been leaked. I think you can find it on Doctor of Credit and Miles Earn and Burn. Miles Earn and Burn is probably more reliable. If you go to the tracker on my website at thedailychurnpodcast.com/tracker, you can see that Citi Strada card. And I linked to the Miles Earn and Burn article where there's a link to the 100K offer. I want to say that 100K offer might have just expired. Worth trying, worth just even doing the 80K offer if you really want this card. It's one of those more premium cards and it's like a $595 annual fee, but you get a bunch of coupons that you need to use. One of them is, I want to say it's a $200 splurge credit that you can use at like some really random stores like Best Buy, Live Nation, and a couple other ones. There's, I think, a $300 hotel credit. I mean, you know, it's the usual game, right? Of them trying to just justify the fee. But for the 100K or 80K, that alone will offset the fee, especially because I believe Citi announced that American Airlines is once again a partner for Thank You Points. And American Airlines is valuable because very few, if any, points currencies transfer into American Airlines. Pretty much you need to open an American Airlines card. And now you can open these Citi cards and transfer over. And that can be a pretty lucrative offer. But the thing that I was most excited about, and you might have seen this, is that Citi is doing a very unique, terrible thing where on Friday and Saturday nights, I think they even list like certain hours during those two nights, you get 6x points in dining. So dining becomes 6x just for those two nights a week. And 6x is crazy. That is a lot of points for dining. Like in comparison, I think the Sapphire Reserve gives you 3x on dining. So it's double that. Like 3x is already basically not profitable for the company. the credit card issuer. So 6X is definitely not profitable, which is why they're only doing it for two nights a week. But if you have, you know, ways to play with dining, like, it is worth exploring if you don't really care about, like your city relationship, which I don't. I don't have a lot of city cards. I know some people really value their city relationship. So maybe more data points to follow. But yeah, decided I'll be a guinea pig for this. Yeah, at minimum, it will be an interesting data point to share on the Discord if and when City decides to shut me down or not. I mean, the Prestige card, the City Prestige, if you guys remember that, is still live and kicking. And that card gives 5X on, I want to say travel. I'm almost certain it's travel. That was the card that used to give you, like, was it like every third or fourth night that you book, City just reimburses you. And it didn't even initially need to be through like the City travel portal or anything. So both myself and P2 had that card for a long time. And then they nerfed it. We got rid of the card. But those lucky people who kept the card this whole time, City has kept that card alive. They haven't gotten rid of it. You can still get 5X on travel, which, you know, with some of the more recent developments in the churning world, that's a really lucrative play. And City has not shut that down. So there is some hope that the Strata is like here to stay, or it could just be like a honeypot trap that they're like, all right, who's messing with our, yeah. So anyways, the other credit card stuff that I've been working on this week is getting P3 properly set up, because what I'd done for her was last year I'd opened the Resi Platinum back when the Resi was giving, I think, 15X on dining. And then if you'd referred them or they referred you, they get an extra 10X boost on dining. So that card was giving you a 25X boost, a 25 points per dollar on dining. And that's when I was like, all right, it's time for P3 to enter the Amex game. And I'd opened one for her. And that was a year ago. Can't believe that was a year ago. That feels like it wasn't that long. And it also feels like it was like a decade ago. But finally, that annual fee has come up and we're not going to keep it. And so I needed a place for her. That was her one and only Amex card. And so I needed an alternative card for her in order to keep her Amex points alive. And I didn't want to just like downgrade the Platinum to a green, because you're paying, I think, $95 a year for basically a useless card just to keep your Amex points alive. There's better ways of doing it, one of which is the Business Blue, or Blue Business. I think it's Business Blue Preferred, BBP. And that card is nice because it earns mileage rewards or membership rewards points. It's a $0 annual fee. So you can just keep this card forever. And this can be your base card to keep your Amex points alive. It wasn't actually my first choice, because I'm like, I am going to keep churning Amex for her. So I'm like, maybe it's time to open an Amex Business Platinum, because she'd open that personal Platinum. So first I pulled up the 250K offer for her via my referral link. I mentioned this a little bit more in the last episode, but just like, you pull up the best referral link that you have, and then have your, you know, additional player apply for any card they're trying to open at Amex using your best link so that you get the best referral bonus. And for her, it took a while to pull that 250K Business Platinum bonus. Like, I tried... Oh man, I tried Chrome Incognito, Safari Private, Mozilla Private, Opera. None of that was working. Then I hotspotted using my phone, and on a first try, that worked. Because again, what happens here with Amex is that like they do IP address tracking, and chances are you've never hotspotted your phone, right? And so they don't really have that tracking in their system. And it increases your likelihood of pulling one of the better offers, because they're really trying to target new customers to these. So I was able to, on the first try, once I hotspotted, pull it up for my P3. And actually, I told this little like tip to my friend, and he pulled it up immediately as well on Safari. So, you know, worth playing around with different permutations of that. But I tried applying for the Business Platinum, and she got like the pop-up message, which is crazy, because I kind of just thought like the pop-up message was if you've gotten the card before. But reading the message in more granular detail, you know, they talk about things like, well, look at your credit history, your credit score, cards you've opened, if you opened this card before, but just generally, like, aka your history with Amex. And my feeling is, because she's only been a 1 year member with Amex with only one card, they didn't want to approve her for Business Platinum. I don't know how the targeting decision works there. But she got the pop-up immediately, even though she's never had a Business Platinum before. And I was like, okay, let me try the Business Gold. So I pulled up the Business Gold one. And by the way, if you pull up the highest offer on the Business Gold or the Business Platinum, that means you've pulled up the highest offering that Amex is going to give you, which means you can actually navigate to a different card and you'll see the highest offer on all the cards, essentially, because Amex is like, this customer, this IP address is good. So it was fairly easy to pull up the Amex Business Gold, 200K for that one. And of course, she also got the pop-up for that too. So they didn't want to give her a Business Gold either, which is how we ended up opening the Blue Business Preferred. I figured, you know, it keeps her points alive. This is a good starter card, build up some business history with Amex, and then give it a try. And just see if she gets approved after, maybe like, I'll try it again in 3 months or 6 months. I also had a friend, though, who tried for his P2. She's completely new to Amex, using that Amex Business Platinum 250K, and she was instant approved, despite having zero relationship with Amex. So I really have no idea how they're doing the filtering. It's a bit of a black box. I think the only one that's like more tough to figure out is like Capital One. Like getting approved for a Capital One like Venture X card is like you have to be in this Goldilocks zone of credit scores in order to get approved. And I've been, you know, it's been hit or miss for P3 on those cards as well. But yeah, those are the little credit card churns I was up to for like in bed this week, just trying to make sure they get done, because I have to cancel her like resi card in a week. So I wanted to make sure that she had a card backed up to get the Amex points saved. But outside of those churns, I have been mainly focusing on just getting my parents' stuff in like better shape, better order. Like it's not in bad shape. It's just that like, It's in the shape where they don't really know what shape it is, you know? It's like us if we had a bunch of accounts and we never used Monarch or Simplify to try and keep track, and I didn't do a rebalancing spreadsheet every month so that I know what my allocation between stocks and bonds are. They have things spread out in like I wrote down, it's a long list. It's like they've got stuff in Vanguard, they've got stuff in Fidelity, they've got stuff in Merrill Edge, they've got stuff in like a state pension plan, and an old employer 401k, like everything just sort of like accumulated over time. And there's no consistency in the strategy of what's happening, you know, like, because they've hired, you know, not like independently, but like, you know, Merrill Edge and Vanguard, they'll offer you advisory services and they've signed up for those separately at different times. And so the problem with that is that like, it's kind of hit or miss what kind of advisor you get. And generally that advisor they're not like automatically spending the time to figure out where like all of your other accounts are, like outside of Vanguard, for example. And so they're like, they're optimizing, quote unquote, a strategy that only takes into account like the two or three accounts they have at Vanguard, which is like, you know, maybe like 30% of their total assets, because they've got stuff spread out elsewhere. And then the Merrill Edge guy is doing like his own strategy on this one in the Merrill Edge account, which maybe has like, let's say $100,000. But it's like there's other stuff coming in and they have Social Security starting and they have a pension starting. Like there's not really a holistic picture of everything. And that's what I've been trying to do. And like it's been a lot. It really has. I'm definitely going to have to come back here to keep working on it. But I'm glad I've started at least, because I've gone through a loop. And I'm going to share this loop because if you are thinking or actively helping manage, you know, your parents' stuff, or you're like, I don't want to manage it, but I want to kind of like put some of my churning skills to use so that I like can help them like have a better sense of where they're even at. this might be helpful for you, which is that I first kind of just like asked them where all their assets were, all their passwords were. It's been like a 2-3 year battle to try and get my dad onto LastPass. I personally use Bitwarden, but LastPass seemed just a bit more user-friendly. But just like having all his passwords in there, but it's been a battle because initially everything was in a notebook and he would keep losing the notebook or forgetting to write passwords in the notebook. And then we're migrating him to LastPass, but then he'd like make new passwords and forget to add them to LastPass. So the bulk of our weekly Zoom calls have just turned into me being like, Dad, what is the password to Chase? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, why is it not in LastPass? He's like, I don't know. And we spend like the next 45 minutes trying to reset his password and do Chase. And by the time that's done, we barely have time to even talk about anything, even outside of finances, you know? And so doing it in person has been helpful. But my initial thought was like, okay, is there a way I can consolidate all of this stuff into a central location so it's not spread out at 5 or 6 different brokerages and banks? And ideally, it's a tool that does some like automatic rebalancing for them so that I'm not the one every month having to rebalance their stuff. And the one that consistently kept coming up was Betterment. Mr. Money Mustache uses Betterment. Wealthfront is another alternative, but generally, I think when I look at like Reddit community comments and stuff, people do seem to like Betterment more. And I was like, okay, I ended up doing so much research on Betterment. I'm like, this sounds like it could be perfect. You know, it does automatically, it's a robo advisor. So you set your risk tolerance, you can set an allocation, it does automatic adjustments. And it will like supposedly handle like before you retire scenario. And then after you retire, it tries to figure out like what is like a paycheck that it can essentially give you as a distribution out of your stuff. So on paper, it seemed like it would be perfect. And I had like many long conversations with ChatGPT being like, hey, what are the benefits of like Wealthfront versus Betterment versus Fidelity versus Vanguard, all this stuff. And then finally, I'm like using it and setting it up. And I realized that it is like, I think the best analogy I came up with is like a swimming analogy. I think with Betterment, swimming, it's like, you know, those floaties you put on kids' arms at the swimming pool. And so like, if you don't know how to swim, those little arm floaties are amazing. Like that's right. Like now you can be in the water and you won't drown. But if you do know how to swim, those arm floaties are extremely annoying and they'll like hinder you in more ways than they'll help you because you know how to swim. And so that is, I think, the main appeal of Betterment is that like if you just don't know what you're doing, you don't know anything about anything, great. Like pay them the 0.25% advisory fee, which is like it's expensive in the sense that like I'm used to ETFs with an expense ratio of like 0.03%. So giving them a quarter percentage point, I was like, it's worth it if they do everything they promised, but I know too much to be dangerous. Like if you've listened to the glide path episode that I did, it's like, I don't want a retirement glide path that looks like a target date fund. It's not the kind of profile that works for my parents, but there's no way to have it auto adjust the glide path that goes the opposite way of what they traditionally recommend. Little things like that that became more annoying than not. And so I switched over into thinking like, okay, maybe Fidelity is the better option, because in the swimming analogy, Fidelity is like, here's the ocean, go swim. And you know, and if you're a good swimmer, man, like all the options are endless. You can swim anywhere. Fidelity supports every type of account in a pretty usable interface. You can manage everything yourself, but that's the thing. You really like the robo advisor's not that great. You really want to be managing everything yourself if you use Fidelity. And so I was like, I guess that, like, do I want to be doing that constantly for my parents? I'm like, I guess so, because realistically, you know, it shouldn't be that hard. It's just like once a year, we just need to talk and be like, what do you want your like stock versus bond allocation to be? Ideally, we just set that plan, the next 30-year plan ahead of time. But like each year we could check in, and then doing a rebalance shouldn't be that hard, because you're just, if you just do like a 2 or 3 fund portfolio where it's really just world stocks and world bonds. So you don't even have to bother with like international versus US. If you just buy like I think it's VW or VX that covers the whole world, and then BNDW covers the whole world for bonds, it can just be a 2 fund portfolio and you just reallocate that once a year. I'm like, actually, that doesn't sound too bad. Because the other issue with Betterment, and I didn't know this until it was almost too late. Like, I've spent an hour or two trying to cancel ACATS transfers into Betterment today because initially I thought I was going to do Betterment. And then after I initiated the ACATS transfer, at that point, they show me a help page that tells me how they handle ACATS. And it's not great if you're moving in taxable accounts, because what Betterment does, their whole thing is that they have a custom portfolio for you that they maintain, they do the allocations for. Like, you tell it what your risk, and maybe you want 70% stocks, 30% bonds, but then exactly what they put in there is very specific and they decide. So if you ACATS transfer, if you transfer a taxable brokerage account in that, let's say, has, you know, a mix of like individual stocks, and you've got some Vanguard stocks and stuff, Betterment will sell everything in there until it matches what they use in their portfolio. If it doesn't match, they're going to sell them and then rebuy theirs. And so in a taxable account, that's going to create a taxable event for a lot of your stuff. And I was like, so wait, that doesn't, like, are we, if it's like $100,000 that we're moving through a brokerage account, and if they have to like sell everything in there, even at like long-term capital gains rate, you're looking at like, what is that, like $10,000 or $15,000 of tax liability if a lot of that was profit? Like, it was just, it became more of a headache. Whereas Fidelity, you transfer everything over and everything stays exactly the same. And then at that point, like, you could put everything into a spreadsheet so that you know what the allocations are, or you can plug it into Monarch. I think Monarch's investment side is not the best. So I've been thinking about using Kubera, which is another one that Chris Hutchins had recommended. And I think he has a discount code through his membership site if you're interested. But I was like, I think they have a free trial as well. So I was going to try Kubera in case that does a better job of telling me like, hey, I've linked 20 accounts. Now tell me what is the percentage of stocks versus bonds in that account, because I don't know, because different advisors like Merrill versus Vanguard have been picking different funds and have been doing different strategies, and it's just like a soup of stuff that it's hard to tell what all the little individual bits are. So that was my new idea. And then we got started talking about Vanguard again, and initially I'd like completely dismissed Vanguard when my dad was talking about it, because I'm like, they're like a dinosaur of brokerages, you know, like everything is hard to use. The UI sucks. They're charging you 0.3% as an advisory fee. And what are you even getting from that, you know? But the more we kind of hashed it out, I had to like reach Vanguard for like a customer service question. The more I'm like, thinking that Vanguard is actually the best option for just parents, really, you know, who aren't super financially like stock type stuff savvy, because like their advisory is actually so far has been very responsive and very knowledgeable. And the UI issue kind of is negated by the fact that there is an advisory, because what we could do with the advisory is I could just say, hey, we'd like our allocations to be 70%, 30%. What do you recommend? You know, can you please just go ahead and execute that for us? And my dad has said things like, their advisory has advised them on things like RMD, like required minimum distributions. Once you hit like 70 something, they've advised them on like, converting stuff from the 401k into the Roth so that you pay taxes on it now versus later and paying a lot of taxes on a lot of money. Maybe start paying it now while your tax bracket is lower, like stuff like that. Or like how you factor in your Social Security income, against the fact of you have, your stocks and stuff invested, and how does that affect your risk profile? That's a question I'm going to ask. But these advisors, they're like certified financial planners, and you in theory have unlimited access to them. Like, they will try and call you once every 6 months as their minimum. Like, they want to make sure they talk to you at least twice a year. But like, I can just schedule online with them and we're going to have our first call next week. And I'm just like, can I just have a weekly call then with you for my dad's 0.3% advisory fee? Because if that's the case, it's sort of like having a more knowledgeable AI assistant doing my balancing, except it's a real person who studied, you know, this stuff. And they're going to know way more stuff than about retirement than I would, because I come at it in a very like FIRE mindset, like financial independence, retire early, where I'm investing in a 60-year horizon because, you know, like I've got 60 years, hopefully, before I die. Whereas my parents is different now because they're retired and they don't have 60 years. And I'm not used to that way of thinking. And I think that is a weak point of a lot of folks in the FIRE community. A lot of the resources, even like Mr. Money Mustache, is more focused on the accumulation phase. How do you get to early retirement? It focuses less on post-retirement. What is like the optimal strategy? Especially if you're just retiring at a normal age, like in your 60s. They don't really go into that. At the meetup, like I went to a couple weeks ago, that was one of the questions and no one really had a good answer because they're not really focused on that side of the equation. And so I'm like, I think after all of this, because it's how this started, was like, I was like, you're paying Vanguard how much to do what? Can't we just do that ourselves? But like full circle after like spending a week here, I'm like, I think I finally understand the use case for Vanguard. And I think the use case is for like older folks who aren't as financially, not even savvy, just they don't want to spend the time and mental energy to like figure this out. And I, like, obviously from a time perspective, I'm like, do I really want to be fully managing their finances? And then also from like, someone on Reddit have brought this up, from like a, not so much liability, but more just like a relationship feeling thing. It's like, you know, if you're your parents' advisor and the market tanks and they're not used to that, like you sort of take the brunt of the blame almost, even though it's not really under anyone's control. Whereas if you have a Vanguard advisor, it gives you a bit of like, you know, just be like, hey, look, this is like, we did this together. We had a professional trying to help us. And this is just the way the market is, you know, because you can't predict it. So there is that added bit as well. But primarily for me, it's just like, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And of course, I can figure it out and educate myself and become an expert in like age 60 plus retirement planning. But it's like, yeah, and ChatGPT can teach me a lot of it. But like, how many hours and weeks do I want to spend doing that when there are certified financial planners at Vanguard who seem very competent, who does this day in, day out, and they can do a lot of like the basic, answer a lot of basic questions, and there's a flow they have. Obviously, I have a different opinion on how target date funds should glide path than they do, but that's as simple as me being like, hey, we prefer a different version of this. Can you execute on that? And so, yeah, long story short, that's kind of where I'm currently at. And it's a process, man. It's, the whole thing is a process. We're also doing estate planning, where it's like, you know, they're setting up a irrevocable trust, or not a revocable trust. Irrevocable one is a different, has a different use, but a revocable trust seems like something everyone should have, which is that like the whole point is that it avoids probate if, you know, if they die. Because now the main thing you move into that revocable trust is the house. So now the trust owns the house and you designate who's gonna get the house through the trust documents, versus if they died without it, it goes into probate. And that is both expensive and time consuming. So they're setting that up. We're setting up durable power of attorney and medical and financial power of attorney because of, yeah, health issues and advanced directives. That's never like a fun one to talk about, but it's just like, what do you want to do under different like life-threatening essentially situations at the hospital? Like, do you want them to just try and keep you alive no matter what on machines and tubes, even if there's no hope of saving you? Because that is what they're gonna do. That is what our medical system does. because of liability issues, unless you specify otherwise. And that's where that advance directive comes in. And I recently discovered another document version that's more user-friendly, I guess. It's called Five Wishes. Definitely worth reading through, even if you're young. Like, you never know. Like, I'm going to do that with my P2. It's a little booklet that they have at a lot of different, like, community, like health or retirement places. You can just get that booklet. And it's like advanced directives, but advanced directives are, it sounds very legalese, and then you like basically need a lawyer to help you do it. Advanced directives is like the layman's version. And it was written though by lawyers, and it has a little questionnaire, and like, what are your five wishes, like for your death, basically. And I think it's like never too early to fill that out, because if you're in a car accident or something else, you or your partner is going to wish that you had that. And so trying to do that with my parents, and then also I'm just like, I should just have one of these too. So it's been like, I know this is not churning related, but maybe this is just generally useful life advice, hopefully, to start thinking about some of this stuff. Like, I've just not been wanting to, because no one really likes to think about sickness and death. But I'm just like, I'm so glad we're doing it now versus when something bad happens. At that point, trying to figure this out would be, it's going to be the last thing on my mind, right? And so, that's been kind of my week. I'm going to get back and go hang out with my parents. I'm not even going to do show notes for this one. I'm going to send it out, because I was like, maybe I should just skip this week. But I'm like, let's just do it. This is the whole point of this webisode series, is just to kind of experiment with things and see how, like, like how easy I can keep this, you know, and maybe it's hopefully still valuable for you guys to listen to. But I will upload it, get it sent out. You should get it by Friday morning, and apologies in advance for no show notes. And hopefully, like, in the next week or two, we can get these back on Spotify. But in the meantime, hope you guys are having a good week, and go eat some in-kind restaurants. All right. See ya.